Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. A Spanish presidio was established over 300 years ago in present-day San Antonio. San Antonio de Béjar played an important role in Spain's expansion into the vast, geographically diverse Texas territory. But San Antonio was not the capital of Spanish Texas. That title came later. The first capital of Spanish Texas was a small fort and mission near the eastern border with Louisiana, known as Los Adaes. Los Adaes served as the Spanish capital of Texas for almost 50 years, from 1721 to 1772. It was doomed for failure from the start. Los Adaes was established in the unpredictable climate of the piney woods of what's now East Texas. It was at the time on the far eastern border of New Spain, just on the border with French Louisiana. The indigenous population in the region, mostly Caddo, refused to be converted to Christianity, so much of the labor used to build and maintain Los Adaes came from the soldiers themselves. Francis Galan is an associate professor of history at Texas A&M University, San Antonio. He's written the first book devoted to Los Adaes. Galan says a short-lived attempt to establish a presidio at Los Adaes failed a few years earlier. He says the region was at the crux of global tensions in the Americas between the Spanish, the French, the English, and the increasingly shrinking indigenous population.
The region itself is home to the Caddo Indians that had been there forever, I mean, 1,000 years or more. And so it's very much tied in to these Mississippian cultures and very farming-based societies. And at the time that the Spanish decided to settle in East Texas, it really came at the end of the 17th century after the appearance of La Salle, going down the Mississippi River and then coming to accidentally off the coast of Texas and claiming it for France, and the Spanish then decide that they need to come out to establish themselves to protect the silver trade of Mexico. And so initially they tried that in 1690, abandoned that project for various reasons in 1693, and then they came back in the 17-teens after the War for Spanish Succession, or Queen Anne's War, and essentially the Spanish monarchy fell under the Bourbon family of France. So the French and the Spanish, ironically, became cousins. And Father Hidalgo had communicated with the French governor around 1713 to try this again, bring the Spanish back and establishing missions. And so it's really through the assistance of both the Caddos and the French that the Spanish were able to come back and settle in East Texas, and eventually reestablish missions in East Texas, and then going even further across the present Sabine River into northwestern Louisiana. And so by then, San Antonio had been established in 1718 as a mission and presidio. And so this was Spain's attempt then to reconquer the region at this time in which Britain is becoming more powerful globally. And so for Spain, they're essentially trying to establish a defensive perimeter. And hence, this ended up becoming the Frontera, Texas. And so then Los Adaes is established in 1721, both as a fort and a mission. Next, very close to the French post at Natchitoches, Louisiana.
And so there's this global stew that's brewing sort of here on this border between Texas and Louisiana. You have, like you said, the British kind of encroaching there a little further to the east and the north. And why was it that Los Adaes was named the capital of Spanish Texas. Again, the assumption would be that the larger Béjar here where we are in San Antonio, that that would be sort of the more natural choice for Spain.
That could be in part because of the fact that the governor who established it initially from Coahuila, the Aguayo expedition in 1721, at that time you did not yet have the Villa, the San Fernando. The Canarianders would come in 1731, and at the end of the 1720s there was a General Rivera who had inspected the northern defenses of New Spain or colonial Mexico. And after his report, that's when they had designated Los Hedayas as the capital. And that was just prior to the arrival of the Canary Islanders. But that was officially the seat of the governor, although more often than not, he would spend time in San Antonio.
And let's talk a little bit about why that is, because from what I've read in your book, Los Hedayas, the first capital of Spanish Texas, Los Hedayas was unlike many of the other past established missions and presidios. For one, there were mostly military soldiers who were in it. It was not so much focused on settlements as it was just having a presence there. And then the weather and the climate and just the general lack of being able to feed and sustain oneself there made it really impossible to be able to kind of sustain civilization there for a long period of time, which probably explains why it only lasted just a few decades. But can you explain how those conditions led to it sort of becoming this independent-minded part of Spanish Texas that grew to rely on illegal trade with the French and with the Indians? All that kind of all came together.
From the beginning of its establishment in 1721, it was around 100 soldiers that were garrisoned there, and about a third of them actually brought their spouses. And so many of them had initially come from Monclova in Coahuila, or Saltillo in Coahuila, and the thinking was that better to bring along spouses and to bring along families, learning from past experience in East Texas among the Caddo, that when the Spanish did not bring their soldiers initially in 1690, that led to disaster. Historian Juliana Barr talks about that in her book, When Peace Came in the Form of a Woman, and looking at the relations between the Spanish and the Indians and the significance of women, the importance of women on the frontera. And in the case of Los Hedayas, I mean, they really are on the frontera. I mean, they are so isolated from the rest of Mexico that the weather does come into play with flooding and the inability to be able to establish a sustainable harvest. And so they rely upon the French for food supplies, and it is through that that the Spanish government allows initial trade with French Natchitoches. But as some scholars have noted, that also proved as a cover for contraband trade. And going into the 1730s, things got really bad to the point that the local soldier who was the temporary commandant, Lieutenant Joseph Gonzalez, wrote Governor Sandoval, who is here in San Antonio dealing with problems here, that you better come back, because if you don't, everybody may abandon this place because it's suffering. And incidentally, in the spring of 1736, there is this quote-unquote elopement of Lieutenant Joseph Gonzalez's daughter with a French soldier. And so in a way, that kind of bridged this border. And of course, the French had close ties with the Caddos already. And so that really kind of brought the Spanish into their network in that region. And so as I tended to see it for the people in Los Hedayas, they were really increasingly looking more eastward than southwest in terms of their relief. And so I didn't originally intend to talk a lot about smuggling, but it seemed like that ended up being such a huge topic.
Francis Galán is a historian and the author of Los Adaes, the first capital of Spanish Texas. He's a professor of history at Texas A&M University, San Antonio. When we come back, the 18th century presidio at Los Adaes was like any other border community at any point in history.
Oh my God, this is like a modern border town setting. And so that so much is going on across the border, especially trade, you know, kinship, worship.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Did you know many companies offer workplace giving programs? It's an easy way to make your support for Texas Public Radio go even further. Don't miss out on this simple yet powerful benefit. Visit tpr.org/workplacegiving to see if you're eligible today. Giving back has never been more accessible or impactful.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The 18th century mission and presidio known as Los Adaes was the first Spanish capital of Texas. It was located on the frontera of New Spain and French Louisiana. It was not unlike other border communities today. Goods were smuggled, and people crossed to trade and to forge cultural and familial bonds between enemies turned allies. Los Adaes was located over 1,000 miles away from the main Spanish capital in Mexico City and hundreds of miles away from larger, more fortified communities like San Antonio. The missionaries, soldiers, and families in Los Adaes started some ranching operations, but depended on goods from their French and Indian neighbors across the border to survive day to day. Historian Francis Galán has written a comprehensive history of this little-known mission and presidio. He says the Spanish crown saw illegal trade on the Texas-Louisiana border as a threat to its empire.
Smuggling would end up almost being a kind of death knell for the Spanish Empire on its peripheries everywhere in the Americas, because the British are just plying their trade. The French are doing the same thing. And here in this little part of the empire, you have people at the local level are doing things for survival that their superiors may not necessarily agree. And so it's the proverbial, you know, obedezco, pero no cumplo, you know, I obey, but I don't comply. I mean, that seemed to be the case a lot. And so for the settlers there, it's also something to keep in mind that for the religious aspect of the community, the missionaries acted as de facto chaplains. In the Spanish missions of East Texas, historians, scholars have noted that, you know, there weren't any conversions of the Caddo. And I note in my book that, you know, the Spanish viceroy had denied the Spanish in East Texas the use of military force to gather Indians into the missions. Otherwise, the Caddo might rise in rebellion with French allies. And it is interesting that the Franciscans ended up evangelizing beyond, quote-unquote, the mission walls, but they also went and gave mass at the chapel inside the fort. They also went over to Natchitoches, and they would give the sacraments, you know,
baptism, the French were also Catholic,
marriage, burial. And it was through that you also have this more ingraining of the community, because after all, they were both Catholic.
Yeah. What was also, I thought, really interesting to me is that, you know, even though the crown is frowning on this illegal trade, still some of the governors and the higher-ranked military are taking advantage of some of this illegal smuggling, and they're using the soldiers at Los Adaes to their own advantage, taking advantage of them, making them gamble, making them do a lot of hard labor. Can you talk a little bit about maybe sort of that sneaking around by some of those upper-level folks?
Yes. Well, so there's a chapter that discusses the residencias, or the administrative reviews of the governors and their time in office. And officially, when, you know, people are asked or questioned, deposed? You know, did the governor engage in smuggling? The answer is usually, oh, no, he behaved. Did he engage in Indian slavery? Oh, no, he behaved. And but you end up learning from the archival records that the governors were using their soldiers to send them to go trade hides in Natchitoches, Louisiana. They were taking goods to trade with the indigenous peoples. They were even going down to Saltillo. I think even one instance of going all the way down to Mexico City, perhaps at the secondhand markets in Mexico City. But for the most part, though, the governor, it's almost like they're carving out their own little empire, if you will. The soldiers then, especially the officers, are used to patrol. They're supposed to, ironically, keep out smugglers coming from Louisiana. And they do stop some people from smuggling, but for the most part, the governor confiscate the goods, place them in storage, say, at Mission Natchitoches or at Los Hidalgos, and actually use that then in their trade with the French and Caddos. Officially, though, the governors are doing what is referred to basically as gifting, and you wouldn't think this, but balas, which is ammo, pólvora, gunpowder, and other goods that generally you would think that you would not do. But it's generally the Spanish trying to establish some kind of friendship and alliance with the local indigenous peoples. And so, you know, you also have the Caddos, who are very powerful in and of themselves, and they tend to kind of get overlooked in terms of that early Texas history, naturally because of the rising power of Apaches and Comanches. But in terms of the smuggling and the governors themselves, they do end up getting tried. The 1750s and 60s, especially with the French and Indian War, lots of trade going on between Los Hidalgos and Natchitoches, especially in hides. And then again later in the 1760s, there are deserters appearing from wars, and they're appearing at Los Hidalgos. There's even one in which some slaves, African slaves from Natchitoches, come to Los Hidalgos to engage in a kind of underground economy, if you will, that is secondhand. So it is at the high level, but it's also going on at a lower level as well.
And slavery is illegal in New Spain at this point, but you do have a chapter in which you do touch upon slavery. We know that it was common in French Louisiana, but in Spain, you point out that not really the folks who were living at Los Hidalgos, the Hidalguenses, because they were too poor to have any slaves. They did kind of their own manual labor, but some of the Spanish governors, maybe not so much calling them enslaved people, but calling them, you know, captive Indians or others who were, you know, in peonage of some sorts. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, basically like criados, you know, especially Lipan Apache, who one of the governors in the late 1740s purchased African slaves, but also ends up having servants that are indigenous. And so largely these are Lipan Apache captives who may be taken from this area and sent over to Los Hidalgos, but many captives that are also sent into Louisiana as part of the Indian slave trade, which technically Spain outlawed, but in practice it still continued. And so this being where it is in the frontera of Texas and Louisiana, you have this crossing of both this African and indigenous slavery, which is really fascinating.
And a lot of border communities, I don't know if you've ever, I'm sure you have, taken a look at how the situation was on the Spanish-Louisiana border and maybe compared it to maybe the Texas-Mexico border or maybe other international borders. Have you kind of made that comparison about how the more things change, the more they stay the same?
Yeah, it's interesting you should ask that, because when I was trying to conceptualize a thesis or main argument for my book, and I go out there and visit the site of Los Hoyas and then go over to Natchitoches, they're really only about 12 to 15 miles apart. So that's an afternoon's walk for the people that are there. My spouse is from Laredo, and we would often go across to visit her family in Nuevo Laredo. And it, for me, it's just like, oh my God, this is like a modern border town setting. And so that so much is going on across the border, especially trade, you know, kinship, worship. And so those are some of the things that actually filter then into my overall argument. Contemporarily is, for example, the Yucatan-Belize borderlands, in which you have the Spanish and the British contesting over there because the British are trying to establish Belize as this, for the resource of timber to feed its into its sugar plantations. And you have African slaves fleeing to the Yucatan, and Mayans who are fleeing to Belize. And for those who are African coming into Yucatan trying to seek religious refuge, if they become Catholic, they can stay and they become Spanish. And so then in a way, it's almost like Los Hoyas with Texas, Louisiana frontiers, like the other side of the Gulf of Mexico, you know? But that would be the case in many borderland settings, not just locally or regionally, but indeed globally.
Skipping a little ahead to the final years of Los Hoyas, there were other East Texas missions that were shut down. You write that there were some Spanish officials, when they would come to Los Hoyas, they would say, oh, we need to close this place down. Yeah. This place just isn't working. And ultimately, they did decide to close it down. But then you actually have a chapter, I believe it's called The Trail of Sorrows.
Yes.
And it is something, I guess, kind of shocking to read, especially knowing that the Spanish did it to their own people. So sort of, yes. Can you set the scene for us end of Los Hoyas?
I tried to look to see elsewhere, were there cases in which the Spanish government themselves were the ones that forced the people to leave that were their own settlers. And so that really does kind of stand out, because you don't really see too many examples of that. But that has to be also placed in the context of war and global events, because in the aftermath of the French and Indian War, North America, or known in Europe as the Seven Years' War, which ended in 1763, France had transferred Louisiana to Spain. And so as part of the so-called Bourbon reforms to really reform the military and to make the economy more efficient, the Spanish came to inspect the frontier, kind of like General Rivera did in the late 1720s, and essentially then decided to close down some forts and some missions. And so Los Hoyas, since it no longer had its official goal of protecting the frontier or the border, because basically now that Spain had Louisiana, the border became the Mississippi. And on the other side, it was the British.
Yeah.
And the British acquired Florida through the Treaty of Paris of 1763. So Spain had lost it, basically. They had paid for their compact or being of the Bourbon family and siding with the French. But in that aftermath, then, in the summer of 1773, the order came for the settlement to abandon and march to San Antonio.
On foot, left everything behind.
And one of the leaders who emerges is Antonio Gili Barbo, who was born and raised as Los Hoyas. His father was a soldier there, and his mother was ill. And so apparently he had left her behind at one of the ranchos. And so then there were children who had perished as well. And so roughly, say, 400 to 500 had to leave. And
what's the distance between San Antonio and Los Hoyas?
It's about 350 miles. It could be even 400 miles, just depending where you're at and where your ranchos are. And they made the journey. They arrived sometime in September, and then
to San Antonio,
and then almost immediately petitioned to return to East Texas. They're given permission, even though the governor at the time in San Antonio did not trust them because they had gained a kind of reputation for smuggling. The viceroy allowed them to return, but they weren't allowed to return all the way back to Los Hoyas. They wanted to keep them on what would be the present west side of the Sabine River in East Texas. And so then they established a town called Bucareli, and this was a civilian settlement. About half of them had returned to East Texas and established Bucareli on the lower Trinity River. And it was in existence for about 5 years until 1779, when flooding, disease, trouble from Comanches had to force them to abandon Bucareli, and then they go to the former site of the mission Nacogdoches to establish the Pueblo de Nuestra Señora de Pilar de Nacogdoches. And so essentially then modern Nacogdoches is considered to have been established in 1779, although it has a much earlier history going back to the Caddo and the mission. But then there's another, like just under half of the people who remained in San Antonio, and they were supposed to be given lands to settle on, but there was no lands to be given to them. And eventually they are awarded lands from Mission San Antonio de Valero around 1793. They established the Pueblo de Valero in the neighborhood of the present Alamo.
So going to, you know, the current Los Hoyas site, as I had mentioned earlier, it's not like some of the other missions or presidios that people might think of when they think of a Spanish mission. They were made out of wood, which is mm-hmm. a material that is not going to last very long mm-hmm. in the elements. So the site that we now know as Los Hoyas, it's now a state historic site in Louisiana. How was it known that existed? Was it a lost site later rediscovered, or did it just manage to stay alive in history just long enough to where it did earn this recognition of being this first capital?
Well, sometime around the Adams-Onís Treaty of 1819 between Spain and the United States, Spain transferred Florida to the United States. That was the treaty that ultimately established the Sabine River as the border between Texas and Louisiana, which exists today. And there were still places marked as Hoyas, either maybe the Hoyas village in the area. And so there are descendants who do live in that area that claim to have roots with Los Hoyas, as well as with Nacogdoches, Louisiana. But at some point in the 20th century, there were old-timers who had donated land to this site sometime during the Great Depression. And then in the 1970s, around early 80s, archaeologist Pete Gregory did his dissertation at SMU on Los Hoyas. And so it was almost like he really drew a lot more attention to that site that helped make it a historic site.
Well, why do you think that this is such an important piece of history that we need to know? Again, you know, those of us living here in Texas, all of us are sort of taught this one bit of history, which is where the history of Texas starts, 1836, yeah. Battle of the Alamo. But there's so much more. Again, reading in your book, it's incredible to me just the number of Native peoples that are living in this particular mm-hmm. piece of land where this book is set. So, I mean, what's the lesson that you'd like for us to walk away from what we're learning about Los Hoyas?
Well, for that time period, at least, you know, a sort of lesson was that, you know, no matter how many boots on the ground Spain put, they weren't going to really be able to police that border because everybody would just skirt around them, if not the troops themselves engaged in smuggling. And so there's always going to be smuggling no matter what borders there are. But it's also this idea that borders can unite as much as they divide. And that could be something that applies in the present day. You know, the fact that this is a place in which there's a historical marker there that mentions how Los Hoyas holds significance for commemoration of the history of the United States. And And I was like, wow, so somebody already said it, you know, but they didn't say what that was. And it was the spot where Spain checked American westward expansion after the Louisiana Purchase in preventing the Freeman Custis expedition, which was sent after the Lewis and Clark expedition. Everybody knows about Lewis and Clark, but not about Freeman Custis so much, and almost went to war. And so if you think about it, and you mentioned 1836, you know, that had that not happened, who knows? Maybe there wouldn't have been a Battle of the Alamo, or maybe there would have been something else. But it does call to the attention that, you know, the origins of Texas are really diverse, and that there are different parts of the state that contributed to the formation of our great Lone Star State.
Well, Francis Galan, it's been terrific talking to you today. Thank you
very much. Thank you.
Francis Galan is an associate professor of history at Texas A&M University, San Antonio, and is the author of Los Adayes, the First Capital of Spanish Texas. Galan has authored several scholarly articles on Spanish Texas and borderland studies. His next project will follow Antonio Gil Ibarbo, who led displaced Los Adayes families eastward from San Antonio to eventually found Nacogdoches in 1779. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.